T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
My personality was to blame.
What the call is that?
I was not afraid to say what was on my mind.
Boomer Esiason.
Esiason, wide open is Brooks. Boomer just threw that football up like it was on a hanger.
Host of Boomer and Geo, mornings on WFAN.
Hey, you see that Urban Meyer video?
Yo, I have not seen the video, no.
You saw the video. We all know you had to have seen that video, Joe. Come on. Anything else, Boomer, before we let his job?
I was just going to ask him about his defense.
1988 NFL MVP.
The Cincinnati Bengals AFC champion.
NFL All-Pro and four-time Pro Bowler.
Esiason, the talk of Cincinnati.
Analyst for the NFL Today on CBS.
There's Joe Burrow, the Cincinnati Bengals. He's thrown for over 2,600 yards, 21 touchdowns, 11 interceptions, completing a high percentage of his passes. He's the best quarterback in Cincinnati since Kenny Anderson.
You are on a roll already today. You insulted me 30 seconds.
It was a mistake, I swear.
Boomer Esiason with Parkinson Spiegel on 670 The Score.
That is remarkable. That happened? That was yesterday? Oh, can you imagine your Phil Simms and Boomer sitting next to you? And you legitimately say that and forget that Boomer was even there? And call Joe Burrow better than Boomer just like that?
Oh, wait.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry.
No, my bad. I meant Jeff Blake. I meant Jeff Blake. He's the best quarterback since Jeff Blake because you were really good, and then Jeff Blake was also pretty good, thrown to Darnay Scott, and then I meant you at that point. Yesterday, what is it, 3 out of 4 Sundays without the Bears? And we're waiting on Boomer Esiason. We will talk with him as soon as he calls in. Is that 3 out of 4? Is that what it's been? Because you had the bye in there. You had the island game.
Thanksgiving Day.
And then you had Thanksgiving. I think it's been 3 out of 4. Very, very weird. It's a lot of Sundays without the Bears here. Kind of nice, frankly.
You've had no victory chicken. Well, I mean, they got a win for that, but I guess you could have had it.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that because we did
this past week.
We did indeed have victory chicken today. Thank you to Joe's Seafood Prime Steak and Stone Crab for feeding the crew. Take your tailgate to the next level with Joe's large group carryout. Joe's Seafood and Prime Steak and Stone Crab, I think, as you know, Ranji offers the finest prime steaks, freshest seafoods, and world-famous stone crab, a lineup any Chicago fan could be proud of, guaranteed to please in all three phases, and the Bears won Thursday, so we indeed did have victory chicken today. So.
Love Joe's. See, that's where we should have gone with your $550 you won in your parlay. But you have committed another $150
correct
to other ventures tonight.
Yes.
So, I hope those hit because we're going to Joe's next time I'm in town.
But I'm
are taking me.
I've allowed myself to be infected, and I want to thank FanDuel. I want to thank the app for being so good and so easy to work with that I have now thoroughly infected on the football front, the NFL football front, and perhaps a little NBA as I bow down to Gambler, as we all end up doing.
You know that this is the Thanksgiving. Well, it's Christmas season, but we just had Thanksgiving. And the purpose of the holiday is to give thanks for things that you have in your life. I want you to be thankful you live in Illinois and that you do not live in Missouri. Because if you're me and you want to put a little wager in on something, you got to go drive across a bridge to get to Illinois.
Uh-huh.
You got to go park in the Casino Queen parking lot or the FanDuel Sportsbook down here.
There you go.
The parking lot there. and then you have to place your bet, and then you have to drive back home. Because Missouri, I don't know if you know this or not, little backwards. The state's a little backwards. They're going to adopt gambling approximately 2037.
That's the plan. Yeah. You're going to do it around
then. No joke, it might be the last state to adopt it. I would not be surprised. Wow. Maybe Idaho, maybe Utah or something. Mm. But it'll probably be Missouri. If not, it'll be bottom five.
I have this thing now, Ranger, when I see highlights or it's starting to happen. And I wonder if it happens at all to you. Like for years, it had been every time you see Mahomes, every time you see Deshaun, you think about Mitch, right? And you think about the disaster that was. At some point here, you know, we have to think about if Mac Jones long term is just going to be better than Justin Fields. It's entirely possible, of course. As of right now, because Justin Fields has had some success and then a little bit of regression this past week, and he's working in such chaotic conditions, as we know, with such limited resources on the coaching front and everything, that you know, the book has not been written. But every excellent Mac Jones start now is starting to give me a little bit of anxiety.
And that makes perfect sense. But I think the chaotic environment that you mentioned that Fields is operating in, I think Mac Jones would clearly be in the exact same position if he were here. If the Bears had taken him instead, we'd be having the exact same conversation. I think he's able to flourish because of the situation he is in. He's got clearly a good coaching staff. Arguably the best coach in the history of the NFL as his head coach. Any quarterback would be thriving there. Justin Fields would probably be thriving there
if
he were there right now.
A brilliantly devised and really well-executed offensive plan to protect a young quarterback and enable him to grow and make a lot of short throws, use a ton of play action. He's ridiculous on play action, and they run the ball well.
Makes a lot of good decisions. But I also believe that being a quarterback who makes good decisions, part of that is being in an environment that makes you comfortable enough to be able to do that. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that you can just, even if you're very smart, which clearly Jones is a smart guy. I think Fields is a smart guy, too. It's just hard to, in your first year in football, it's hard to operate smartly when the team around you, the environment you're working in, is not conducive to it. The way Fields has done this is in spite of the Bears. It's in spite of the coaching staff and the talent that is around him or the lack of talent around him. He's doing all of these things. I think Jones would be struggling just as much, if not more.
I absolutely agree, and yet still that anxiety is starting to be there. It's starting to be there, and you're because I mean there was a long time there, and still when I see that Chandler Jones made a play, and here come the Cardinals and Chandler Jones, or when Whitney Mercilus was making plays, I would think about, you know, Shea McClellan being drafted by Phil Emery instead when those guys were sitting there right on the board and they went to the next couple of picks, you know, and certain moments like that become like just forever linked, that you will always think of certain players together like that. You have any players like that that you think of in that way? Because I'm starting to realize that Fields and Mac Jones are gonna get thought of in similar ways for Bears fans here.
I understand why you're doing it now. I the sample's so small though, and I know you understand that.
Of course.
So I'm not worried about it right now because the skill set Fields has, as long as the guy stays healthy, I think eventually he's going to flourish, and he might even do it in spite of the situation he's in. I don't think this situation continues for very long the way it's going now, maybe through the end of the season. They're not going to make a head coaching change now. They'll probably do it when the year is over, and we can only hope that they set something up better with the next regime, it helps him along better. I do have concern about that, but if anybody is capable of working past a suboptimal environment, I think Fields can do it. But, I mean, there's part of me that's worried, And I understand why you're looking at Jones maybe with a slight tinge of jealousy. Like, oh my God, did we get this wrong?
What it really ends up being is being jealous of the system that is in place.
That's it. That's it.
And the system that I'm referring to is the acquisition of talent, the drafting of people, the acquiring people in trade. You talk about a culture. I mean, obviously, they just know what they're doing, Bill and whichever personnel guy is following Bill's orders. They have such a solid thing in place. They know exactly what kind of players they want to fit what they do. So they don't have a lot of wasted draft picks. You don't hear a lot about, like, well, they just cut their second rounder. You know, you don't hear that very often. So even when you think the roster's not that good, what you have is a bunch of pieces that he actually knows how to use because he drafted them specifically to fit exactly what he's been doing for 20 years.
And the other part of the equation is this. It's not just the picks they have and hitting on them or not hitting. It's that they've limited the amount of picks they get with all of the deals they've made in the last few years since Ryan Pace has been here.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've traded a lot of that draft capital away. And any good general manager, and Belichick will probably tell you the exact same thing, would say, I know that I'm going to, if I'm doing this really well, like 30 to 40% of these draft picks I'm going to hit. But the more draft picks I have, the more players I hit with. And the Bears have limited themselves in the amount of capital they have because they've traded these picks away. I was happy with the Khalil Mack deal. I liked that they picked him up. It's just the rest of the team was not quite ready. You know, like, I mean, he specifically, individually, good acquisition, but the rest of the team wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
And hasn't been good enough the last few years. And they don't have a lot of that draft capital to work with.
It's just
and
so,
that your margin of error is smaller then.
Mm-hmm. So it's just so ungodly simple what they're doing schematically for Mac Jones too. It's so basic. It's like exactly what you should do for a young quarterback. And the fact that Matt Nagy was not prepared to do that. To me, we know all about that, and we're going to end up having that epilogue, and we've kind of already done it a lot to an extent. But it's like you can see what's playing out there in New England as to what might have been able to play out if you actually went into this thing with an open mind schematically. But that's not what the Bears have done at all.
Well, you needed to have, and I know this has been covered until you're ready to puke, but you needed to have been able to, first of all, you shouldn't have told some other guy the job was his and was going to remain his all season long before the season started, before the draft even happened. You can't really do that. And secondly, if you do, you have to be willing to adjust and prepared to adjust the moment you're not using that guy anymore. And they were not prepared to adjust the moment they told Fields he was the starter over Dalton. And that's a huge mistake, and I still don't know what it is. I don't know if it's hubris. I don't know if it's there's clearly a lack of awareness on some level with this coaching staff, with a head coach, to not realize, okay, this is a completely different player. This is our future. Let's adapt the game plan to him that will help him develop, keep him safe, and also hopefully get better as the year goes on.
So Nagy,
they weren't ready to do it.
Yeah, no, they weren't because he didn't want to do it. That's the thing. That's why, you know, Hub's report of that,
yes,
George McCaskey said this to Matt Nagy makes all the sense in the world. And I tweeted out some bullet points the other day of just like my narrative of like how the season has gone, and like and they didn't. He didn't want to play Fields. He didn't want to. So I think it's completely obvious. I need to hear this. This is Nagy the other day, and maybe some people missed it on their Black Friday shopping spree or their family vacation or wherever the hell you've been over the course of Thanksgiving. But this was Matt Nagy on Friday morning refuting Hub's report as he talked to the media.
But in the total picture, has the dynamic been a little more challenging than maybe you would have thought in March or May or whatever? You know what I'm saying? Is it just
no? Because I don't think you don't know what's going to happen when you have a plan and you set the plan and you knew what that plan was. And again, like that goes to the report that was out there, right? About there was a report out there that George made the decision to start Justin. That couldn't, you know, there's been some false stuff going on. That couldn't be further from the truth. You know what I mean? So, like, that goes kind of that question. When you have a plan and you know what the plan is, and you go with it. And here we are where Andy got hurt. Justin comes in. Justin's the starter. Justin gets hurt. When Justin's back to being healthy, he's back in. And when you have that plan, you stick to it, and you don't look back. And so I just think that, I think we can all – and this is kind of what we've talked about with our team and with our coaches is, yeah, the last 72 hours was kind of crazy, right? And I think we've all learned, I know we all inside this building have learned that, things can be said and are said and can be a little bit blown out of proportion. The abrupt meeting that was canceled, that's another one that's, just to be extremely clear on that, and this probably will help you all out when I tell you. So when you have a walkthrough practice, right, and a short week, typically you have a Wednesday and Thursday on a normal week, a Wednesday and Thursday practice. As you all know, we have a walkthrough in the morning, and you have practice in the afternoon full speed, and then you have post-practice meetings for 45 minutes with your position coaches. When you have a short week or a Thanksgiving week, you morph a Thursday and Friday together as a practice.
Oh, who cares?
No, I'm interested in the way that he's trying to spin this, that none of this stuff is real. None of it is real? No way, man. Freaking way. As he is saying that it couldn't be furthest from the truthism,
Close enough.
Yeah, whatever. There's some fumbling going on there as he lies through his teeth on that one. That's they're comfortable with some misinformation. They're comfortable with some secrecy as football coaches. That one, I think, there's no way that was the plan. It doesn't make any sense for that to have been the plan.
No, and I trust Hub. And when you hear stuff like this, you hear stuff about him potentially losing his job after the Thursday game, or that was going to be the plan. Maybe the report was wrong, but I don't believe there wasn't something to it. Okay, like I said that in a confusing way. I don't think that gets out there or is even told to reporters, or this thing about McCaskey having to tell Nagy that Fields was starting, told to Hub. I don't think those things get said to Hub or get said to Mark Conkle unless there's something behind them, because those guys are not pulling it out of nowhere. They're reporting what they're hearing, and they trust the people who are telling them, and the people who are telling them probably know. And then the organization has to backtrack when it gets out there.
Yeah.
So I absolutely believe that Nagy was told Fields has to start.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
And
I believe it 100%.
And from the owner. And you know what? Boomer Esiason had said all year long, I hate these young quarterbacks getting pushed in before they're ready. Now, Boomer believes that a young quarterback should sit and learn. But that opinion aside, when he says it's all politics, because he said that over and over, it's all politics and listening to the crowd and stuff like that. I think that's what happened here, is that George listened, noticed, like understood what the tenor of the town was, understood what the tenor of the coverage was.
Yeah.
And I absolutely was swayed, showed that he was swayed, and went down there and told Matt what to do. So I think Boomer was very right when he used politics as a way to describe that shift that did happen.
Speaks, who's your favorite tenor of the town?
I think Pavarotti,
yeah,
always.
He's good. I like Andrea Bocelli.
He's been dead a long time, Pavarotti, but right.
He has been dead.
Still the goat. Still the man.
I like Lagello.
Lagello? He was great in Pagliacci. He really was. This will tie in. How many balls are there in a barbershop quartet?
10.
No.
8.
There's 8. No, but the correct answer is 16.
Oh, because what is 4?
No, 16 is the answer because 1's a tenor. Thank you very much.
All right, Tanny, what time do we have to leave for the Bulls game?
Dump him.
Come on, you set me up for that one. You set me up. Lugello.
Nobody set you up for that.
What are you trying? The whole world set
You're
me
reaching.
Up. No, I knew
You're
it my whole
reaching
life.
Reaching for that.
I knew that joke, and then Lugello came into the conversation. There was Tenor. Oh, there was Balls.
Crap.
How am I not supposed to think of that? What am I supposed to do, not tell the joke? Maybe that's what I'm supposed to do.
Yes.
Okay.
No, always tell. Listen, when in doubt, always tell the joke.
I think so.
That no matter what the joke is, no matter what the audience is, if you're in doubt, go ahead and do it.
Mel Brooks is everywhere now, like doing these interviews and talking about his 450-page memoir that he wrote at the age of 95 that is now out. But he was asked like about jokes and punchlines, and he just threw out, well, here's an example. Here's a punchline. He threw out a joke. So here's the joke. Guy walks into a store, a grocery store. And it's a deli, and he's like, all right, let me get some pastrami, let me get some cream cheese. What do you have all this salt? All these shelves are filled with salt. What is all this salt? Do you sell a lot of salt? He asks the shopkeeper. The shopkeeper says, nah, I don't sell any salt at all. But the guy who sells me salt, now he can really sell salt, that guy.
Oh, actually, I think that's pretty funny.
It's pretty good. It's Mel Brooks.
That's pretty good. I like that one.
Yeah.
Haven't you always wanted to after I forgot what the show was that it had Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner and they were eating together like it did.
Comedians and Cars.
It was Comedians and Cars. You're right.
Seinfeld hanging out with them because they'd get together and watch movies. Yeah.
Yes. Wouldn't that just be adorable?
Yeah.
To be in the room with the two of them.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. But now Carl's dead, so I do not want to
Carl's
be in the
dead.
Room.
That is adorable. No, not now.
When one of them is deceased.
Right. All of a sudden, it's awkward. There's decay involved. You're like, why is he still here?
Adam's probably a stank.
Right. Adam. It's a real, like Danny said the other day, it's a real My Cousin Bernie situation. He combined My Cousin Vinny and Weekend at Bernie's. So
that's wonderful. My Cousin Bernie.
Not as entertaining. John Paul Morosi coming up at 3:40. When we come back in a boomerless universe, that's okay. There's baseball news everywhere. And a third member of the White Sox elder statesmen have weighed in now on what they think are some of the problems. Want to touch on that before we get to JP Morosi at 3:40. Right here, it's Parkinson Spiegel with Ranji and for Danny on the score.
I forget who's interviewing him. Whoever's interviewing him just baited him.
Damn right he did. And Danny's proud of it. Danny Parkins is under the weather, hopefully back tomorrow. Chris Ranji is in for him. It's Parkins and Spiegel. Spiegs and Ranji here on the score. So JP Morosi is going to join us in about 10 minutes. But I need to hear this because, like, we've had some of the elder statesmen for the White Sox, some of the veteran pitchers, say some things of consequence. Do we have time to hear all three of these here, Tanny, or – real quickly. So Liam Hendricks had talked when he was awarded reliever of the year. Liam Hendricks had talked about an issue that plagued the White Sox in the postseason.
Just getting guys around. But I think the biggest thing, you look at what we were able to accomplish as a team. I always break it down into the top three with pitching, defense, and offense. And our offense is great. Our pitching was great the entire season. The one area is, I think, defense is the one that's always that motto, the defense wins championships. And unfortunately, you look at the playoffs, we had the lowest defense in the league in the playoffs group. That's something that I think that a lot of the guys over the course of the year, I think they got depicted in a poor light defensively. I think that we're a lot better defensively as a team than what was depicted in the standings or the stats or anything like that. But making a couple of adjustments there and bringing some guys in that are more glove first guys that I think can really make a huge difference down the stretch.
All right, so listen to your pitchers, and Liam is right about the defense, and it needs to be worked on. When Lance Lynn finished, top five in Cy Young again, Lance Lynn, he talked about the game planning and preparation that he thought was lacking a little bit, especially evident in the playoffs.
I think as a whole, we learned that as good as we are during the regular season, there's got to be another gear, another level of not only being the intensity, but also being able to execute the game plan and be able to do what you need to do and do what you want to do and be as convicted in everything as you can. So that's part of the gig. You're looking at you know, Yaz was hurt quite a bit last year dealing with some stuff and all that. So we just got to make sure everybody's on the same page, doing everything that they need to do to have the, you know, the most success.
To me, that's a big deal. That's Lance Lynn talking about game planning. And so guys can go out there with conviction, and that should be an organizational thing. It should not fall to the catcher alone, or even the backup catcher, as it has at different times. And then I need to hear this, because you and Cody Decker in for Parker the Spiegel last week had Lucas Giolito on, and he talked about preparation as well. Let's hear this.
The biggest word that comes to my mind is preparation. We went up against preparation and experience. We went up against a team that had been together, at least a lot of the key pieces on that team had been together for a long time and had a lot of postseason experience. Kind of top down in that organization, they do a really good job of turning a few things on going into the postseason. I felt that their scouting reports against us were really, really sound. And it became tough for us to kind of adjust on the fly and do what we needed to do. I mean, for me, I put a lot of blame on myself. I feel like, you know, starting pitchers in general, if we had performed better, then that series could have gone much differently. But, you know, that's just how the game goes sometimes. And there's definitely a lot to learn from it.
Wow. So the question, when you say preparation in general, do you just mean for individual players, or do you mean organizationally?
I'd say a little bit of both. You know, kind of knowing what you're going up against, and being ready to make the adjustments when necessary, especially when it comes to like the little things that a lot of people don't see, like tipping pitches and stealing signs, that legal sign stealing. I'm not talking about anything nefarious, but all those kinds of little things that these organizations that are in the postseason year in, year out, like that's what they're really good at. I think it's important that, you know, we learn from that as players and as an organization as general, so that, you know, next year I've obviously extremely high hopes for our club. I think that, this off season, we've been making some nice moves so far. So, I expect to be right back there again, and we'll be much more prepared.
That's a really good follow-up by you. And he did put some on the organization, which you could hear in the first answer, frankly.
My first question to him was, in the playoffs, you know, after the Oakland series, what do you think went wrong for the team? We know he had a rough start in a series against Houston. And that was his response. He's talking about the Astros, and he mentions, well, he throws in experience. It's preparation, but also experience. Mm-hmm. He says, you heard him there. And I almost got the sense like he said preparation, and then he thought, okay, that's going to kind of sound bad to the organization. So it's also that, and they had experienced players. But when the Astros won in 2017, and I know they had the whole cheating thing going on, but they may have won the World Series anyway that year. They were that good. The only experience they really had was Carlos Beltran, and that's a lot of experience, but it's not like that entire team, top to bottom, was just full of guys who had been around forever.
No, he said, you know? He said that organization really from the top down in terms of how they... You know, scouting reports and execution. He could not have been more clear on that.
Yeah. So it is what he's talking about in part are things that I'm sure you and I have discussed. In fact, I think we did about how, and it's not just about the gloves. It's not about the individual gloves in the field. It's how they're positioned.
Yep.
It's how all the defensive players are aligned before the ball is thrown. And the Sox were one of the worst, if not the single worst team, in terms of shifting. They just didn't do it. And if you look at some of the at-bats, like we picked apart, there were...
Michael Brantley.
Brantley and Carlos Correa, too.
Yep.
If you look at where the White Sox, and a couple of those, there was one game in particular, I forgot if it was game 3 or game 2 against Houston, where there were a couple of balls that just got through the infield. It's like somebody should have been there.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? So there's that. There are the defensive issues, and then what Lucas is talking about with the preparation and scouting reports and knowing how to attack hitters. as opposed to those hitters knowing how to attack the White Sox pitchers. That's what he's speaking to, I think, pretty directly. Interesting stuff. Glad we heard that and glad to bring it back. John Paul Morosi will join us and give us the very latest on the craziness that is MLB free agency today, why it's all happening, and where the Cubs and the Sox are or are not in all of this. That's next on the Parkinson Spiegel Show here on The Score.
Hey, John boy, how's the weather?
John Morosi.
Hello to a new adventure. Living my life in Michigan, my home state, surrounded by family and friends.
Columnist for MLB.com.
Please go, Gabriella, please. Buy via.
There you go.
Did you just shoo your kids away in a foreign language and then lock the door behind them? Is that what
That's
just happened?
That's precisely what happened, yes.
Yeah.
Non sono sicuro.
But in Italian, it sounds much nicer. You know?
That's it. What's happening?
Fox Sports Baseball contributor. Yeah.
Fox Sports Baseball God, John Paul Morosi.
I'm a God, I'm not the God.
MLB Network insider.
Michigan defeats Ohio State 42-27.
Celebrate with my children. It's an incredible moment. It's so emotional. It's just the highest celebration I've had.
John Morosi.
I'm so happy. I can't lie to you. It's the best moment of my life. All the fans who are here supporting me, it means the world.
John Morosi with Parkinson Spiegel on 670 The Score.
I love how excited he is to join us. Best moment of his life when he joins the Parkinson Spiegel Show on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. JP, congrats on your Michigan Wolverines getting over the Ohio State hump. Good for Jim Harbaugh. You enjoy yourself?
Well, Matt and Chris, happy Thanksgiving belatedly to you and your families, everybody listening today. It certainly was a great weekend in Ann Arbor. I did watch the game with my kids here at home, celebrated with them, and it was unique to be able to share with them. This was the first time as a father that I had witnessed Michigan defeat Ohio State. Back in 2011, I was not yet a dad, so that was a pretty remarkable thing to say that I could actually do with my kids.
You know, they say this about ball players. They were due. Michigan
they
was
due
to finally get that win. Yeah.
They were due, yeah. Chris. And you look at it, and really, if we're being fair here, the 2011 win, Ohio State was in the probation time, and Tressel was gone, and it was a really odd year. That doesn't really count as a true rivalry win for me. So this is actually their first legitimate win against an Ohio State team since 2003. So it's pretty remarkable. Michigan finally gets to see what it's like to play in Indianapolis. Never happened before at the Big Ten Championship game. So should be fun, tough matchup against Iowa. I'll be watching and enjoying that, as we hope there are even more signings to process in the baseball world, because the last few days, my friends, I feel like this is trade deadline level of frenzy, maybe even more than that. It's been extraordinary, something I have never quite experienced in all my years covering baseball.
Yeah, every once in a while, baseball lucks into this kind of thing. And then they try to make the most of it, which is good. I like that all the games now on the final day start at the same time. I feel
yes.
like that's in part a product of what happened a few years ago. Was it 2008 when we had all the craziness happen on that?
I think it was 2011.
It was 2011, because
yeah.
it's the night that broke the Red Sox and brought Theo
yep.
Epstein to the Cubs, among many other things. But how about just the last few minutes? Corey Seager yep. to the Rangers, 10 years, $325 million. So now they have Seager and Semien in the middle infield. They sign John Gray. They're a fascinating place to start, because they're not in the moment in their life cycle as a franchise where they're ready to win right now. But
at least we didn't think so.
We didn't think so. Exactly right. So is this to jumpstart a rebuild or try to get competitive right away? What are they doing?
Well, I love the way you framed it, because you're right. And this is where, for me, free agency is supposed to work this way. It's supposed to be the place where a team that has been dormant, really absent from the national scene for years, can jump back in when they're ready to spend. Clearly, the Rangers were ready to spend. My colleague Joel Sherman put this number out there, and it's astronomical. And I'm going to say it clearly, because it blows your mind. The Rangers, in the last several days, have committed more than $500 million. More than $500 million. To those free agents that you mentioned, of course, adding in John Gray to now their new middle infield with Seager and Semien, and then Cole Calhoun as well. Again, more than $500 million, which I think just tells you how healthy the industry is and how healthy free agency is right now that it could produce numbers like this. You're right. The Rangers were not a team that we looked upon recently as being one that was close to winning, close to competing for a division title in one of the more competitive divisions out there. But now with this middle infield, they clearly are. Do they have the pitching to go toe-to-toe with Houston and now Seattle with Robbie Ray? We will see. Of course, John Gray likely is now their ace. Dane Dunning, of course, the former White Sox, is probably their two or three right now. They need some more help there, but they're a lot better, a lot more compelling of a club now than they were a couple days ago. And I'll say this about Corey Seager. He must love playing in Arlington. Of course, he won the NLCS MVP and the World Series MVP in that ballpark a year ago.
It's a team that won 60 games in 2021, and typically you don't see a 60-win team the following offseason commit that kind of money. Dead last in the division, and then they go and do this. And if you're a White Sox fan, and I know the offseason is far from over, but if you're a Sox fan or even if you're a Cubs fan, but in particular the White Sox, who are in their window, they're right now in their window. We don't know how long this window is going to last. When you see all of this action happen over the last few days and your team is not a part of any of it, how should you feel? Is there reason to still be encouraged that something significant can happen for them?
Yes, I think so. And I'll start with the Sox. I think for me, coming into this, they have had and still have one of the more complete rosters in the AL. You look at the American League Central, where Cleveland is right now, the Guardians, I think they're coming back down to earth a little bit. The Tigers, they're closer. I don't know if they're quite ready to eclipse the White Sox, but they're closer. You look at the overall dynamic, I think the White Sox have a little more certainty with their rotation. The player that I'm watching for the White Sox, who probably among all the other options is the one who might fit them the best of anybody out there right now still, is Chris Taylor. And Chris Taylor is still out there. He could play second base for you.
Yep.
He could play the outfield for you. Versatile bat, winner, World Series champion. I think for La Russa, he almost reminds him of sort of that classic NL player that can bounce around the field for you, play where you need him to play. I realize it's a different game now, but I think Tony likes that kind of player. And I think Chris Taylor really gives you a lot of certainty there. What is their, you know, DH situation going to be? I think that's actually one intriguing thing for the White Sox, is that because of the way that Abreu still plays first base, even as he's about to turn 35 years old, you can sign someone that you look at as potentially rotating through the DH spot. I would be a little surprised if it was the former Cub and Anthony Rizzo. I'd be really surprised if that was the case. But I think it just opens up a lot of offensive possibilities for the White Sox, because if you look at DH right field, there's some at-bats there to be had where I think the White Sox can get creative.
I love the Chris Taylor idea, mostly because I absolutely agree with it. I brought it up today to Dan Bernstein.
Nice. Very good. Hey, how about that?
Yeah.
Hey, great minds think alike.
There you go. But they've been trying to shop Craig Kimbrell. Everybody knows this. Are they going to have any success? And apparently not here before this deadline comes, because they're $22 million away from that luxury tax hit. And I feel like they might be waiting. Are some teams, I guess here's the way to ask this as I ramble to you, JP Morosi.
No, it's all good.
Is there anything to glean from the teams that are spending and the teams that are choosing to wait, like the Cubs and Sox are, in from a business perspective, from a fiscal perspective?
Right.
Is there any reason that some of those teams might be waiting that we're not thinking about?
Sure. No, it's an interesting question. I think as it relates to the bullpen in particular, a lot of teams are waiting on Raisel Iglesias. He is the guy. He is an outstanding closer. Tremendous numbers this past year with the Angels. He's likely to get a multi-year deal. Maybe 4x15, 4x16, something like that. He's headed for a huge payday. And so I think if you're the White Sox, you wait until he signs somewhere, and then you would call up the teams that finished second and third in that competition and say, hey, I know you want a closer. I've got a guy who might go to the Hall of Fame, probably will go to the Hall of Fame potentially, here on a one-year deal, coming off a pretty solid year. What do you think? I think that allows you to trade him in a clearer market. I think that if you try to do it right now, you obviously have the end of the CBA, which is obviously not halting any free agent activity. But I do think it's created more of a push to get free agents signed than major pieces traded. A report here just since we came on the air about Jacob Stallings potentially going to the Marlins. I think you will see players traded, but the blockbuster names might wait. And I think Kimbrel is still a huge name. So for me, you're waiting on Kimbrel until Iglesias signs. Clearly to me, the Graveman addition is further telegraphing the reality that the White Sox are not going to keep Kimbrel. And I think from that perspective, it actually affirms to me that I don't think that Rick Hahn would sign Graveman if he was not confident that he would find a place to move Kimbrel. I don't think that he would do that unless he had a fairly strong idea of the marketplace. And finally, I would indicate that we don't know at this moment what the CBT threshold is going to be. We could assume that it's going to be something similar to what it was in 2021, but all that's being negotiated as we speak. We can hope for a good resolution. We're not sure what's going to happen, but I think all of those limits and the potential of a floor as well, by the way, are still very much up for discussion right now.
They got a lot out of their starting pitching this past year, but are they confident that with what they have already in-house that they can do that again? Because from my perspective, that seems to be an area that still really needs to be addressed.
No, I think you can make that case, certainly. I have always been a big fan of Lopez, and I think he gives you good insurance, and you could swing him into a different starting role. We'll see, obviously, the tender deadline's coming up tomorrow with Lopez now being a 4+. Is he for sure coming back in that role next year? How many innings can you count on for Kopech? I'm of the opinion that the White Sox rotation, while still potentially needing improvement, is good enough that you don't have to have been in the market for Robbie Ray before he goes to sign with the Mariners. Do you take a 1 or 2 year shorter term deal with a Marcus Stroman if you would come to Chicago under those circumstances? Perhaps, but I don't know that you have to go there unless you really know something that we don't about underlying concerns of your existing group of five. There's not many teams out there who have a sixth option like Ronaldo Lopez there and who have someone as talented in the fifth spot as Michael Kopech. I realize Keuchel has been inconsistent at times. He's still a pretty good four. So you look overall, this is I think still a very, very good team that underperformed in October, but is still a really good ball club. And they can probably be choosy, I would say, and really wait till tomorrow's tender deadline. Maybe somebody out there, maybe even someone like a Matthew Boyd for the Tigers. He's going to have surgery or he's got an injury situation that's keeping him out a bit. But that's the kind of arm you could gamble on because the rest of your rotation, I believe, is more solid than most.
30 seconds here, JP. Do you expect some more big ones here before tonight? Seager came out of nowhere. I wonder if we could even see Correa or other shortstops by the end of the night?
I doubt Correa. I think Baez is much more plausible. And the Tigers, we know, were involved on him. I don't know that I would say the Tigers are the favorites there. I think a lot of teams have been involved on Javi. Really intriguing player, as we have talked about many times in Cubs conversations. So I think of those big names, Javi is probably the one that stands out to me the most. KB, Chris Bryant, he might go in the next 24 to 48 hours as well. It's a staggering amount of signings happening right now.
Baez to the Cubs, still a possibility? Is that still on the table?
Possibility, but I would think that he will end up going elsewhere, as will KB.
Okay. Thank you so much, JP. You're the best.
My pleasure, guys. All the best. Enjoy the conversation. Thanks so
much. This is a day to keep Gabrielle out of the office.
I heard some noise in the background. I said, oh, please. Prego, non questo giorno. Not today, my child.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
Buona giornata, child.
Yep, sounds delicious. John Paul Morosi from Fox Sports joining us right here. All right, shift. Boomer Esiason. Remember that guy? He's coming up next right here on the Park at the Spiegel Show. Pat Mattingly will join us in the 5 o'clock hour. So we got lots to do. Stick around here on 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.